acknowledged his superiority, and his juniors always looked up to him. He was certainly no fatalist, as most people use the word, and yet never once in his life had he experienced the unshakable certainty that he and he alone had arrived at a decision. He always had the feeling that fate had forced him to decide things to suit its own convenience. On occasion, after the momentary satisfaction of having decided something of his own free will, he would see that things had been determined beforehand by an external power, cleverly camouflaged as free will, mere bait thrown in his path to lure him into behaving as he was meant to. The only things that he had decided for himself with complete independence were the kind of trivial matters which, on closer inspection, revealed themselves to require no decision-making at all. He felt like a titular head of state who did nothing more than stamp the royal seal on documents at the behest of a regent who wielded all true power in the realm, like the emperor of this puppet empire of Manchukuo. The doctor loved his wife and child. They were the most wonderful thing that had ever happened to him, especially his daughter, for whom his love bordered on obsession. For them, he would have gladly given up his life. Indeed, he had often imagined doing so, and the deaths he had endured for them in his mind seemed the sweetest deaths imaginable. At the same time, however, he would often come home from work and, seeing his wife and daughter there, think to himself, "These people are finally separate human beings, with whom I have no connection. They were something other, something of which he had no true knowledge, something that existed in a place far away from the doctor himself. And whenever he felt this way, the thought would cross his mind that he himself had chosen neither of these people on his own, which did not prevent him from loving them unconditionally, without the slightest reservation. This was, for the doctor, a great paradox, an insoluble contradiction, a gigantic trap that had been set for him in his life. The world he belonged to became far simpler, far easier to understand, though, once he was left alone in his residence at the zoo. All he had to think about was taking care of the animals. His wife and daughter were gone. There was no need to think about them for now. The vet and his fate could be alone together. And it was fate, above all, the gigantic power of fate that held sway over the city of Xinjing in August of 1945. Not the Kwantung Army, not the Soviet Army, not the troops of the Communists or of the Kuomintang. Anyone could see that fate was the ruler here, and that individual will counted for nothing. It was fate that had spared the elephants and buried the tigers and leopards and wolves and bears the day before. What would it bury now, and what would it spare? These were questions that no one could answer. The doctor left his residence to prepare for the morning feeding. He assumed that no one would show up for work anymore, but he found two Chinese boys waiting for him in his office. He did not know them. They were 13 or 14 years old, had dark complexions, and were skinny with roving animal eyes. "They told us to help you," said one boy. The doctor nodded. He asked their names, but they made no reply. Their faces remained blank, as if they had not heard the question. These boys must have been sent by the Chinese people who had worked here until the day before. Those people had probably ended all contact with Japanese now, in anticipation of changes to come, but assumed that children would not be held accountable. The boys had been sent as a sign of goodwill. The workers knew that he could not care for the animals alone. The vet gave each boy two biscuits, then put them to work helping him feed the animals. They led a mule-drawn cart from cage to cage, providing each animal with its particular feed and changing its water. Cleaning the cages was out of the question. The best they could manage was a quick hose down to wash away the droppings. The zoo was closed, after all. No one would complain if it stank a little. As it turned out, the absence of the tigers, leopards, bears, and wolves made the job far easier. Caring for big carnivores was a major effort, and dangerous. As bad as the doctor felt when passing their empty cages, he could not suppress a sense of relief to have been spared that job. They started the work at 8 o'clock and finished after 10. The boys then disappeared without a word. The vet felt exhausted from the hard physical labor. He went back to the office and reported to the zoo director that the animals had been fed.